I'm Ruth Ferenga, founder of Conscious Leaders. Now, this podcast aims to change the world of work one honest conversation at a time. And I hope you enjoy these conversations. They're with proven people leaders running highly successful businesses. And if you're interested in developing your leadership skills further, I've digested their top traits and behaviours of these best people leaders into a book. It was recently a finalist in the Business Book Awards, and it's called Next Level Leadership, 9 Lessons from Conscious Leaders. To order your copy, visit consciousleaders.org.uk/book. And you can also subscribe to my bi-weekly newsletter, where I share free content, including practical tools to help leaders move from good to great. And this month, I'm introducing Emily Hill. She's co-founder and CEO of a sustainable scale-up company called Geiston. Well, I started by asking her just how she got to where she is now.
I mean, I don't think my childhood is particularly interesting, but there are a couple of things maybe that, if I think back at it, sort of shaped maybe who I am and how I lead my business. The first is that my mother is a formidable lady. She always worked full-time. She studied for a PhD in her evening and weekends, traveled around the world presenting her research work in sort of microbiology. Later on, had a sort of second career as a venture capitalist investing in new startups. And she invented a needle which revolutionised a small area of public health as well in the middle. So she did a lot of stuff. There were a few things, you know, when I was young that were difficult to get through. We, you know, my parents divorced. We moved to America briefly, came back to the UK, didn't have anywhere to live for a little while. My stepfather died when I was 17. So a lot of things which could seem really hard, but I think my mother was so resilient and so strong that I don't really feel they sort of like impacted me in a negative way. So I think I've learned...
Her strength protected you.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I've learned a lot from her just by extent in terms of resilience. And the other thing from my childhood is that I was a real tomboy. I really wanted to be a boy for a really long time. And I just wasn't into girly things at all. Didn't like dresses, hated ballet, stopped that as soon as I could. Had a bit of a crew cut for a number of years, and the greatest pleasure for me was when people thought I was a boy and mistook me for a boy. So I think, although I got over that phase and, you know, it was never really sort of like an issue for me, I think I've always just had the opinion that I can do anything men can do. I've never sort of shied away from any practical tasks. I always loved maths and engineering types of subjects. So although I've always been people used to tell me I was very shy, and I think I was just quite quiet, quite softly spoken. So I think people maybe thought that I didn't have as much confidence as I did, whereas actually my inner confidence has always been quite good.
So quite a lot of poise and kind of...
Well, I don't know if you describe it as poise, because that sounds really good. But certainly like an belief in myself that I can do what I want to do. So I studied maths at university and didn't immediately go into software development, and felt very much like I wasn't a computer geek. So although I was quite attracted to programming as a sort of career, felt like, oh, I'm not sure I really fit in with that crowd. When I did decide, no, I think maybe I could give this a go, I kind of gave it my all and I backed myself. It was more that I wasn't sure the other people would accept me in that role, rather than thinking I couldn't actually do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's quite interesting what you said about, it sounds like your mother's belief in you and how strong she was meant that you developed a level of resilience and self-belief.
Yeah, I think so.
That was very like protective or like empowering for entering this world that would be very male dominated, and maybe you're one of the only women doing software development. I don't know.
Yeah, one of very few. But I don't think. And people often ask the question, "Oh, women in tech, how has it been? What challenges have you faced?" That sort of thing. And I've never really felt that challenged by it. And I think that's because I've always had that self belief, and I've never really thought of myself as... Well, I have thought of myself as a woman, but not like that being a defining feature, I suppose.
Right.
So I've never really felt massively challenged by being a woman in tech. I feel like I'm a bit left out almost.
Yeah.
People ask me the question, I don't have anything to contribute. But I do think it's probably a lot of that's come from my upbringing without me realising it at the time.
So, world of software development, studying, and then
Yeah, so I became, managed to get a job as a software developer, knowing nothing about software developing. So that was good, and trained up. And actually, in that role that I first had, my then mentor became my husband. So we worked together at a company in London and then moved to Bristol. We wanted to move out of London, and we spoke to sort of the people we worked with in London, and suggested that we might start a new office for them in Bristol. Hmm. And it turned out, in the end, the way we configured it was a joint venture between the directors of that company and us.
Hmm.
And that's how we ended up starting Geiston off in Bristol.
Now, your journey with your husband's quite an interesting one. You know, we met at a People Day Summit at the Bristol Technology Festival, where you were doing a very, very informative fireside chat with someone from And Digital as well. And I was struck by this level of generosity for sharing. And I don't know if you could talk to this journey you and your husband have had with the business, because I was so interested in how you develop things and kind of ended up, you know, changing roles in a way.
Yeah.
So it's I won't say more than that, but I'd love you to tell us. But
sure. So yes, as I said, my husband and I came to Bristol and started the business here. At the time, we had one child who was about one, and in the sort of next few years, we had two more children. So I was sort of in and out of the business, and he very much took the lead in the early years, getting the business set up. He was a bit more experienced than me as well. He'd been in a more senior role in our previous company. And I was really happy with that, because I've never really been a leader-y sort of person. I've always been a really good supporter, mm-hmm. really good number two, deputy leader. Mm. And so I was really happy, actually, with that arrangement. He did a great job starting the business off. And in between sort of maternity leaves, I was back in the business just doing whatever was needed. So although I started off as the project manager, I then ended up working in the people team and heading that up for quite a few years. But after about 5 or 6 years, it's quite hard starting an agency, you know, and there's ups and downs and it's quite stressful. And I think my husband needed a bit of a break from it. One of our clients was trying to get him to come and do some work for them, to lead their technical team for a really important period of time that was coming up for them. And I think it just seemed like the right move for him to step out of the business for a little while, have a bit of a break from that and do something a bit different. And I was faced with a bit of a choice, I suppose. There were three directors, and the other director could have stepped up, or I could step up. And basically, we had a car journey to Cornwall with the kids. I think they were asleep in the back by this point. And we were just sort of trying to decide what to do next.
Where all best board meetings happen.
Yeah, definitely.
While driving to Cornwall.
Yeah, well, there's something about driving, isn't there?
You
can both just sort of be in your own thoughts. But my husband said, no, I definitely want to leave Geiston for a while and go and do this other opportunity. And I decided that I wanted to take over the leadership position in Geiston, even though it was really scary for me. And the reason I wanted to do it is because I thought I could do it and I owed it to Geiston. I really believed in the company, the people that we'd employed. I sort of owed it to them to make sure.
It's in your name.
Exactly. I think the main thing for me was I've never been confident talking in front of groups of people. I just felt like that was essential for a leader, because that's what you see leaders doing, isn't it? Speaking at things, speaking to their employees. And that was the thing that really made me nervous, I'd say. Not the doing of the job. I felt like it was the best place to do that. That's why I really wanted to step up and do it. But it was quite a big step for me to do that. But that's what we did.
Charisma or public speaking?
Charisma, definitely, yeah. I mean, the first thing I did was read a book about charisma. I think it's called The Charisma Myth.
Okay, yeah.
Different types of charisma. Mm. I loved that book. So basically, it told me I was all right.
Okay, good. So that's
what we did. So we kind of switched around. And then my husband spent a few years out of the business and then came back, and now he's also in the business as well. So it's...
So he's rejoined, effectively.
He was still chairing our board. He was still involved. Right. So we had him, sort of his guidance. And it was actually really... We really appreciated that. It was quite good to have that slightly external perspective, because we hadn't had a board outside of the company. So it was actually... In that sense, really great for him to step out and still be able to input and give us ideas and help us move forward. Yeah,
and
exactly.
A bit of a space.
Yeah.
Piece of space.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's a moment there where you were like, should I or shouldn't I?
Definitely.
Do this thing. Mm. This is a big change. It's a big, I don't want to say leap because that's not my words, but if it felt, I don't know if it felt like that for you, but competency-wise, it sounds like you had it, but...
Pretty much, but I mean, we still had three really young children as well.
Right.
So I was working 3 days a week at the time.
Right.
And I think our kids were 2, 3, and 5 or something, you know, they're quite close together. They're still young, yeah.
Very young.
Maybe a tiny bit older, but... So it did feel like not the best timing in that sense. But you can't choose the timing always, can you?
No, you can't. 2, 3, and 5. Wow, I mean, I don't have kids yet, but 2, 3, and 5 sounds like quite an intense period still, like, before they're in school. And my friends tell me that's still quite a lot.
It is a lot. And actually, as well, I was like, I want to do the role, but I don't want to not have some time with my children. So we had a comedy conversation where my husband said, you probably need to go up a bit more on your hours because you'll be doing my role as well as your previous role. And I said, well, I guess I've thought about this and I agree, and I'm going to be increasing my hours from 3 days to 3.5 days.
Okay.
That seemed reasonable to me.
Yeah.
But also bringing people beneath, you know, promote people, get other people involved.
Yes.
Don't have to do everything myself. So that's how I did it.
And how did that land back with him? Was he...
I think he just probably rolled his eyes and thought, oh, Emily, what's she doing? Yeah. She'll learn the hard way. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, he respects that, you know, we'll do things my way and then he'll be there to, you know, he's supported me. Yeah, I don't know, actually.
So from the devil's advocate kind of perspective then, so, you know, part-time CEO, right?
Yeah.
So how was that for you? Like, and I don't say that in any kind of... derogatory way, because I think that's really interesting because you don't see it that often.
Mm.
You don't often see a CEO doing 3.5 days a week.
No.
And I wondered how was that for you?
Yeah. I think, for me, it was just like, why not? Because I didn't actually know that many CEOs and I'd never been one. So it just felt like, I don't see why this shouldn't be possible.
Yeah. And out of interest, because I'd love to know details. Share as little or as much you want. Was it 3.5 days across the week? Were you a bit flexible? Were you quite strict on what was, you know, like, I'm not on emails on a Friday or, you know?
Yeah.
What helped with that? What did you learn about lifestyle-wise that made that work as well as work-wise?
I think, I don't remember 100%, but I suspect the situation would have been that on a Friday, which has been a fixed day off ever since I had my first child, I would have struggled to be on emails because I had two small children at home with me.
Good luck with that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But always at the end of the phone call. And of course, we had our other director who was still in the business. And he's still now. So he was always available. So not much that needed my input on a Friday that couldn't wait for Monday or he couldn't make a decision on. And then on the other half day, I would have probably been around a little bit, you know. But it's only holiday, isn't it? But only... You know, if you're not there for a couple of hours, that's just like being in a meeting for a couple of hours, really, isn't it?
So tell me about decision-making at Guy's. Any practical examples, any ways in which you deal with questions that come up or, like, you know, if we're doing being more facilitative, how does that play
out? Yeah, well, we have a lot of different things we do, I suppose. We have processes in place so that our leadership team is meeting weekly and discussing issues and making decisions, but we also have... a few mechanisms within the business where people can input into things. So if there's a big project going on, we'd usually form some sort of task group from around the business to inform that. And the other thing we do regularly is have what we call dinner forums, where we'll take a group from across the business out for lunch or dinner to discuss a couple of topics, which are either kind of things we need to discuss and decide on in the next few months maybe, or just longer term things we want to improve on perhaps, or ideas people have shared about how we could do better, or what different services we could offer. It can be quite broad, so people can contribute ideas to our ideas board for the forums, and then we'll pick a few topics. A couple of people from the leadership team will host this meal, and people can say if they're interested in coming, or we might pick people to ask them to come to make sure we've got a diverse group there. And then we'll discuss the topics, get people's ideas and input, sort of test the water for some ideas maybe, and then feedback to the business on what the conversation was and what actions we want to take from it. So I think it's a really nice way of getting different people's opinions and sort of gauging where people are at with ideas we might have as well.
Yeah, because we came across this in our conversation before this podcast, and I remember thinking, dinner forums, this is kind of a very practical, genius idea. Firstly, from a perspective that it sounds like you're buying people dinner, so you're giving something, or lunch or whatever it is, and then they're giving in return in a way, like in that, their thoughts on a particular subject. I mean, something we talked about in our pre-chat was your company holiday, which I thought was a great example. I don't know if you're willing to share the current live debates or that. It's very interesting.
So yes, we have a company holiday every year. We go for a long weekend somewhere away. We invite partners if they'd like to come, and some people bring their children. It's very family sort of thing. And traditionally, in the first number of years at Geiston before COVID, we would always go abroad. And we'd take a short flight, hop over to Europe, somewhere sunny normally. And in the last few years, we've got much more serious about measuring our carbon footprint. We've got our net zero goals in place. And there's been a lot of questions over whether it's still appropriate to fly everyone in the company abroad for a long weekend. And we have a lot of employees who really love that part of what we do. That's one of the things they love most about working guys is going on that holiday once a year somewhere abroad.
It's a yearly pick me up for
it. It genuinely is so fun. Like, you're somewhere, especially when you're somewhere quite different, and then you're bumping
Where
into.
Where have you been,
may I ask? Our last one was in Barcelona, the one before was in Nice, and then other places. I'm going to struggle to remember them all. Lisbon, I think that's one. So lots of places. But the people who want to bring their families, and just generally people who are conscious of the planet, I suppose, sustainability, are saying we can't do that. We should be staying more locally.
Okay.
So there's a conflict there. And that was one of the topics at the dinner forum, was like, what should we do? What's the right thing to do? Is it more important for the business with our sustainability goals to shut off all things which are optional, I suppose. But then we started talking about vegetarian lunches, and it turned out everyone wanted pepperoni on their pizza. So even though having vegetarian lunches in the office would also, when we buy lunch in, which is actually quite regularly, that would also really reduce our carbon footprint, because we do that much more often than a flight to Europe. There were different views on that, and different people maybe in different camps on the pepperoni pizza to on the holiday abroad. So it's very interesting. But what we have done this year is we've moved our pension, and that's actually one of the biggest savings of carbon, is to move our pension to a provider that is more transparent about the funds they're investing in and their sustainability credentials. And so therefore we know that they're good in that sense. So our previous provider we didn't have as much information about, so maybe they were good or maybe they weren't. We've assuming the previous provider was sort of average, we provide as much better, and that made a bigger impact than the flights. So at least we've done something very positive.
So hearing those are good things. Sounds like, like the Emily Geiston is pretty cool, empowered teams and everything. But tell me, what's tough? What is tell me about the darkest moments.
Oh,
I always say share as much as you want, but I kind of want to hear what is difficult about your job or your kind of life you run.
Yeah. Capacity is just difficult generally, just in life. I've got 3 children, a dog, and run a business, and that's just a lot of stuff to fit in. So sometimes it does get quite busy, but that's, I think, manageable. I think that's one thing I find quite hard is I really want people to have a good life. I don't want people to come to Geiston and resent their job or feel like they've regretted those years working with, in our team. And so I think a lot about that, about people. And sometimes I find it quite hard when you can't please people, like they always want more, almost like not on a, or people don't maybe appreciate the amount of effort you've gone into providing this really hopefully great place with all these options. And sometimes I do find that quite tough, because I think it's, I don't need people to come and say thank you to me a lot, but just every now and again, in a low moment, you're like,
the occasional thanks would be, yeah.
Like, or just when people complain about a small thing and you're like, oh, but I did all these other really great things that you didn't even mention or notice. Because, I mean, that's the way it should be. You know, people shouldn't be thinking, oh, Emily's thinking about me all the time. They'd probably think that was weird. Maybe it is. So it's fine, but just sometimes I think like it's a bit of an imbalance, isn't it? You know, that you're thinking about your employees a lot and they're not
giving a lot and
almost, yes. But yes. You know, not they deserve it and they've earned it. You know, we're a team working together for the business.
Yeah. I mean, specifically, we talked about this on our pre-chat as well, was profit share. You operate a profit share.
Yeah.
I believe it's a third of your profits.
Yes. Yeah.
That, to, you know, I meet a lot of people running businesses like yours, that feels to me quite generous. I'm like, wow, great, how progressive.
Yeah.
How does that go down with?
Yeah, I think generally everyone likes it. I think we did a benefits review, so I asked everyone how they felt about the benefits in Gerson. It was actually really interesting. I think I probably made some assumptions about how people felt. A lot of people said one of the things their friends are always most impressed by is the morale stuff, so like the company holiday like you mentioned, but actually the thing they really liked was the pension, because we do a 9% non-contributory pension.
Nice, very generous.
Also generous, but because that's quite boring, we kind of thought people didn't really appreciate that, but they do. And in general, people really, I mean, they like the profit share, but I suppose a couple of people sort of said, oh, there's, I've heard of other companies doing a bigger profit share.
And, there's always someone else.
Always, there's also loads of companies that don't do anything. But not that. I mean, I think it's right what we do. I guess you've just got to have a strong kind of values-led approach with this stuff, haven't you? You've got to just feel like confident that you're doing the right thing and that you're doing what you're doing for good reasons, and that's how you want to run the business. Because otherwise, I think it might be easy to get into a bit of a, well, spiral of, well, no one really notices anyway, so I might as well just make as much money as I can and sell up, you know.
Which is what some people do,
and I can, yeah. And that's, you know, that's fair enough, isn't it?
But it sounds like you're in this either for the long haul or for, like, you know, for the people. But, and I don't mean like you're so perfect that, you know, because I'm sure you would also like to make a good living and, you know, but it doesn't feel like, you know, you're scaling this thing and selling it. And
certainly not. We want to grow a bit more. It's good being a bit bigger, a bit more stable. We're going to move to a new office. That's really exciting, you know. but we don't want to grow massive. At the moment, the intention isn't to grow really big. It's to stay sort of a nice community where we can know each other and feel kind of like they're in a safe,
do you have any idea of how big that is, or is it just an organic thing?
We have like an idea that it's around 120 people, but we might be wrong when we get there. Yeah. We've always thought we'll just get to the next point and then see how we feel.
Organic.
We have some ideas.
With some goal in mind.
Yeah.
What else do you think? You know, we've talked a little bit about decision making and, you know, deferring to different people and dinner forums and all these great ways that you make to. Is there anything else that you think means that senior leadership can be part-time and that anything else that you notice?
Oh, I think our regular cadence of meeting each other, you know, our weekly 90-minute meeting that we have, make sure we all know exactly what's going on and can take actions and help each other out. I think it's great if people can be a little bit available if absolutely necessary on that day, and certainly
a little bit flexible, sort of.
And whilst I work really hard to protect the other people who are working part time, I'm really always very happy to like do a couple of emails on my day off if I need to, especially now the kids are in school and, you know, it's not. My time isn't so sort of absorbed with something else. It's hard to know. I think maybe it's just the culture that we've kind of developed. It's now just that there's not that expectation that people are on all the time. So there's other people to go to. We have a really clear accountability chart, so it's really clear like who is responsible for which things.
Very clear roles and responsibilities.
And not just with the senior team, but of course everyone.
So really clear sort of meeting structure, connection,
alignment.
I mean, this is such a big thing, isn't it? Alignment. Like how connected, aligned, both socially and, you know, I'm sure the social methods that you use help that.
Yeah.
Because people feel somewhat connected to each other, somewhat and comfortable enough to raise things
certainly,
that aren't aligned and then get them aligned.
Yeah.
Plus the
yeah, other sort of operational structures, like roles and responsibilities.
Very
yeah.
clear. Yeah. And also people work, like people do tend to stay with us. So there's a lot of people in the business who've been with us many years and yeah. come. People can go to them. They're really happy to make a decision as to who else should be involved in a decision or what to do if people are off. You know, yes. there's a lot of people who know each other really well. Mm. And I think that does really help, actually.
Mm. These social connections seem that they're really paying off.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Mm, well, this is fascinating. I think you and I could talk for ages, but I probably also better let you get back to your busy work and personal life. But I mean, I'd kind of like to close by asking you about how you look after yourself. Mm. So I sort of tend to ask that at the end of the yeah. podcast, really. What supports your well-being? You know, what works for you?
I have quite a few hobbies, actually. So, and I think for me, when the kids were young and I still had that day all day and half off a week, that was totally absorbed by looking after my children, which was lovely, and I got to spend really special time with them. But I really did miss having a bit of time to myself, and it was really nice when I got that back again, just being able to even just potter around the house for a few hours on my own without anyone yes. asking me for things. It's so nice. So I do try on my day off to just have some unplanned time.
Mm.
But I do also...
you haven't scheduled.
Like, yeah, something. Which is hard for me because I don't like to say no to things, and I really like doing a lot of things, but I do try and have a bit of unscheduled just time at home.
Yeah.
I really try not to like do all the chores on a Friday. I try much better to do them at the weekend and get the children to help in my ideal world. Or at least get them, at least let them watch me do it so they know what effort is going into looking after them, if nothing else.
Yeah, either help or observe my effort.
Feel bad about it, yeah. But no, so I go to the gym with my friend and we do weightlifting a few times. We do that a few times a week. I play cricket. With Thornbury Ladies Cricket
team.
So that's something I took up in lockdown. That was really fun. And I do some cycling and jogging with the dog. I wouldn't say running. That's been an exaggeration. I have a dog, so quite a few dog walks and dog jogs. And I used to play the piano, but I haven't been doing that so much lately. I found the time for that. But I like gardening and cooking. There's a lot of things I like doing, really, that are looking after my well-being, I'd say, like physical well-being, and I like sort of creating things. I suppose that's the cooking and the gardening is kind of like, you know,
sort of it sounds very supportive of headspace for
very much
work and personal life. And there's one thing I'm taking from this podcast is there's a lot of balance. You know, it feels like that, not just for you personally, but in the business, that role modeling of balance, part-time work is not the only thing, and we recognise that. We want to support you personally, professionally, and that kind of sustainable growth.
Yeah, it was a sustainable lifestyle. If everyone's living a sustainable life, then hopefully that allows you to scale what you're doing, I suppose.
Scale your impact.
And I think having those other interests in your life or commitments, if it's, you know, caring responsibilities, does help you, because you kind of have to be more disciplined in each area. So I remember when I went part-time when I had my first child, my manager at the time said, "This is going to be really good for you because it's going to make you be really efficient with your time, set yourself really clear targets so that you can leave on time because you'll need to go and collect your child or whatever." And he was totally right. I think before then I just stayed at work and just faffed around a bit and not really got onto it until like 5 in the evening, and then I'd be like, okay, I really need to get onto it now, and then finish late. Whereas as soon as I had that other commitment that I really wanted to fulfill outside of work, I was much more disciplined and efficient with my work. And actually it meant every area of my life was actually, I was like using the time more wisely, I suppose. Yeah. So I think actually it makes you kind of better at what you're doing.
Sometimes. Yeah. I mean, children is in our plan, you know, the life plan, the grand plan. And it is what I hear a lot of people say. You know, because I ask
interesting,
people, parents,
like,
how do you manage all this stuff? And they, quite a few will say, it's interesting how disciplined you can become when it really counts.
When it really matters. And it doesn't have to be children, does it? It could be, my husband does triathlon, so does lots of training, and he has to fit that in. And because he really cares about it and wants to do it, that's the stuff he makes time for the children as well. But as well as that, he makes time for
the
training sessions.
Priorities in our life.
And if if there isn't a training session, he'd be more likely to work late, but because he's got the training session in the diary, he'd make sure he can stop work in order to do it. So I think it does kind of force you to have that discipline and that balance.
Thank you, Emily. I really appreciated that interview. It feels quite refreshing to have someone have such a focus on sustainability in the way they grow and sustainability of lifestyle. And I feel like Emily really role models what she wants to see in others. Well, you've been listening to the Conscious Leaders podcast, and I'm Ruth Ferenga. I want to facilitate honest conversations with great people leaders so you can learn from their highs and lows and take away sustainable practices and behaviours you can implement straight away. For free practical advice on how to move from good to great as a leader, as well as info on my number one best-selling book, Next Level Leadership, visit consciousleaders.org.uk.